Dr. Williamson, as an anthropologist, could you tell us how you became interested in flying saucers while doing work in anthropology?
Well, it's quite a long story, but it covers quite a long period, too. And I might say that it really began while I was working in Arizona, preparing to do some research in Mexico amongst the Indian tribes down there. I went down into Mexico and worked for some time, but my health became quite bad down there, and my doctor advised that I go to a more northern climate for some time. I decided that I would work with the Chippewa Indians and also some of the Siouxland tribes in the North Dakota. After I arrived there, I began to collect legends, which I felt would make a fine children's book. Many of these legends would be very interesting to children. Many of these stories and so-called myths of these ancient peoples include a great deal of phenomena which might be regarded as saucer phenomena. For instance, the Chippewa Indians of Canada and the northern part of the United States speak of the Jin Gwin, which translated means earth rumblers. And they also speak of flying wheels or flying boats. There is a parallel to that also. We find amongst the Navajo Indians and the Paiute Indians of the Southwest legends of the Haumusus, or the little people. And they are supposed to have flown over this country many hundreds of years ago, according to these Indian legends, in what the Indians call flying boats. I became interested in this because there seemed to be so much of this type of story amongst our American Indians. Not only the tribes I mentioned, but practically every tribe in the United States. Also, I found that primitive peoples all over the world have stories. We find stories in India of flying boats also. About this time, I happened to pick up Donald Kehoe's book, which was one of the first books out on the saucers, the title of which was The Flying Saucers Are Real. I was very impressed with Mr. Kehoe's book and the idea that the saucers were interplanetary first suggested itself to me. However, I could say here that I always felt that other planets besides Earth could be inhabited. In my studies in anthropology, even, it seemed very illogical to think that the Earth would be the only planet out of billions upon billions of Earths that would be the only place where a man might be found. However, I never gave the saucer phenomenon much thought until I ran across it in these legends. After I read Mr. Kehoe's book, I then began to accumulate more legends of this type. Before that, I was not just collecting saucer legends. And when I looked into it, why, the facts for the saucers were really astounding. I got back to Arizona, where I had my home, and met my wife. She had been staying in Arizona doing independent research along anthropological lines. And when I arrived home in March of 52, why, we compared notes, and she had also found a great deal of material which compared with my own. So then we really became interested in the saucer phenomena in earnest.
Now, you met other people who were also interested in the stories of flying saucers.
Oh, yes. There are friends of ours who live very close to us in northern Arizona. He is not professional in anthropology, but he is very, very interested in the archaeology of our state. And he is also interested in many ancient things and in collecting. He happened to come down one evening to my home to visit. And we brought out many of my records that I had been making in the northern part of the United States, and I read some of my legends. The subject got around the saucers. It was inevitable that it would. And we suggested the different pros and cons, the possibility that they might be from Russia or from Spain, or they might be a secret to development of the United States, or that they might be a number of things that have already been discussed by different scientists. And the idea that they might be interplanetary was also discussed. And I asked my friend, if these saucers are being controlled by intelligent beings, they must be more intelligent than we are, since they have come to Earth in spaceships, and we don't have any such thing as yet. Therefore, they must also be able to speak English, perhaps, which is very easily explained from an anthropological standpoint. If they have been coming to Earth for a long time, which it looks like they have, well, surely they would now be able to speak the language, and perhaps these many languages of Earth, and also to know our code systems. So I suggested to him the possibility that we might get a hold of an amateur or ham radio operator, and send out Morse code and try for something. We really didn't have any hopes that we would succeed, because if they were up there in Chittsburg, probably they wouldn't be interested in contacting us anyway, and we wouldn't receive any answer. But we thought we'd try it.
You felt at first that perhaps they would be interested only in contacting civil leaders or the president of a country or a great scientist?
Well, yes. It didn't seem likely that there would be any reason for them to contact us. That surely they would contact the heads of government and some of our leading men in science and industry.
But you were successful in actually contacting spacecraft by radio.
Yes, not at first, however. I might say that after that evening of talking in Arizona, my friend went home and he contacted a friend of his and asked him if he would be interested in trying. Sometime later, this radio man admitted that he had been interested in contacting other planets, not so much saucers, but other planets for several years. The Federal Communications Commission, several years ago, when Mars came very close to Earth, as it does, there's a period there where it comes closer. Every hour, on the hour, for 5 minutes, they had complete radio silence to see if any messages would come in from Mars. And they did receive and have recorded these messages, which they have never been able to decode, in a series of dots and dashes, but not in any system that we know. And these records are in the Bureau of Standards in Washington at this time. Well, these stories interested him as a radio man. And he had also heard of other hams who had been receiving strange signals that they thought were coming from other planets or from spacecraft.
I see. Well, that's a very interesting story. Tell me now, how would you begin transmitting? How would you go about calling a spacecraft from Mars, let's say?
Well, that was a problem that presented itself. Just exactly what would we say? What would we do? And I might add that I cannot mention this radio man's name at this time, because he did not use his call letters in contacting these craft. He didn't want any other operators, I guess, in the vicinity to know that he was trying. Perhaps that was for his prestige in his hometown or something. I don't know, but he just wanted to do the work without that being let out at that time. So we decided that we would send out a message without call letters. That would be Earth calling a interested spacecraft. Now, those were not the exact words, but that was the gist of it. And he tried that for a week or two without having any success whatsoever. And then finally, it was on August 22nd, 1952, in the evening, that a very loud signal came in. Now, I'm not a radio man myself, and I don't know the terminology very well, but I'll try to explain it the best way that I can. A very loud signal came in, and the radio man said that it blocked his set. That's the way he explained it, that it blocked the entire set and was very powerful. By far the most powerful signal he had ever received on that set that he had. As these messages came in, he took them down, but he felt that his friends were hoaxing him, a little friendly joke. But he went along with it nevertheless and took the message down. Well, when we first heard of it, we felt that he was joking us a little bit. So it went both ways, you see.
And you went along with him then?
Yes. And my other friend that I already mentioned that I had talked with in Arizona called me one day and told me, he said, we have had success. And he said that the radio man is quite impressed, but he's not too sure yet of where he's getting the signals from. I told my friend to tell the radio man that to check by all means, because if it was true, we wanted it. We wanted it very much, but if it was not, we wanted to know if it was someone playing a joke on us, perhaps some other operator had heard this call going out, Earth calling any spacecraft, and they just thought that they would come in and answer us and have a little fun. So we wanted to know if it really was true or not.
Well, I wonder, how could a person be sure then that he did actually contact a spacecraft or an extraterrestrial being?
Well, as a radio man, he had several ways of checking on it. One night, there were six or seven people present, friends and relatives, in his ham shack outside his home in the backyard. And without even telling his wife, his back was to this group, because he sat at his instrument board. And he was on 40-meter band transmitting. And he asked a question and immediately received an answer. Then very quickly, he switched to 160-meter band and asked another question, and an answer immediately came in. Now, about a week later, after he had time to think this over completely, he told us that he had done this. And he said that that was proof to him that no one on Earth, anyway, was joking or sending him a hoax.
Well, certainly none of our operators would be able to switch over to another frequency and hear a question and answer it that rapidly.
No, as the radio man said, even if he had told the operator on the other end that he was going to switch from 40 to 160 meter band, before the operator would have found him on 160, the question would have been asked, and of course, naturally, if they hadn't heard the question, they couldn't have answered.
Well, do you think then it might be possible that these people have some abilities in telepathy?
Well, yes, that was our first thought. The radio man, I asked him, how could it be possible then? Is there any way it could be? He said, well, there are only two possibilities that suggest themselves to me. One, telepathy. Two, these people, being more intelligent than we are, possibly have a radio which covers a very wide frequency, I guess you'd call it, or covers all of these bands, so they do not need to tune from one to another.
Did you have any actual evidence, indisputable evidence, as far as you are concerned, that these people are proficient in telepathy?
Yes. Also, they gave us some visible signs in the heavens, but I will answer that question first. One evening, Of course, I might say that the logical thing would be to discontinue the radio as soon as possible. That was only an introduction, proving to us the existence of these people in these craft, proving what the flying saucers really are. The next thing would be to try to arrange for a landing or a face-to-face, a personal contact. We felt that since they had been good enough to answer our call and contact us, then possibly they were interested in the landing. Still, we could not understand why they would only come to us and not others who would be more in authority to spread this information. But we made arrangements for a landing. After we had made these arrangements and had finished our contacts for the evening, we sat down to a cup of coffee. And there were six or seven people present at the time, and we were not trying an experiment in telepathy. I must state that it was really accidental, the way that it all happened. Without even thinking about it, we were sending out a thought, six or seven of us thinking on the same thought. The radio man's father-in-law had just come west from Kansas City, and he's quite elderly and not in very good health at this time. The radio man's wife was worried about her father. She felt that if he would go with us, because he thought we were going on a picnic, why the shock of seeing the ship might affect him, or perhaps they wouldn't even land if another party was present. And if she left him home, the old gentleman would feel very bad because he feel that he was just not wanted because of his age. So she really didn't know what to do about it and was quite concerned over it. So six or seven of us sat around there drinking coffee, thinking with her on how to solve this problem. When after about 40 minutes, and I might add that our set was still on, we were still on the frequency that we had been receiving messages, although the transmission key was off, and he had not sent out anything over the wire asking what to do on this problem.
You were merely sitting around concentrating on this problem.
Yes, nothing had been sent out asking what to do about the father. When suddenly, this very loud signal came in again, saying, "And now about the father," and gave a complete diagnosis of the father's case, which was verified one or two days later by a doctor that they took him to, and gave quite a message about what to do for the father and how to handle that problem.
That is most amazing.
Yes, it is. Unless you had gone through it, it's very difficult to believe.
Then it is established beyond a doubt that they can hear people talk in their homes without being there, and they can read their thoughts.
Yes, undoubtedly.
Imagine many of us would be ashamed of ourselves when we first awakened to that knowledge. Can you tell us a little something of the signs in the skies which you mentioned?
Yes, I feel that that is one of the most important things in this entire happening, because it shows that the other side, or these people in these saucers, were interested also in proving to us of the authenticity of our contact and to let us know exactly who we were in contact with. One night on the radio, the radio man asked, "Can you give us a sign tomorrow?" Immediately, the answer came in, and I will read it exactly as we received it on the transcription. "Yes, yes. Maybe if you can get a glass, can be by Solus at high time."
Then, where they mention the word Solus, does that refer to our sun?
Yes. And if we were thinking of it the way we would word it, it would be, yes, yes, maybe if you can get a telescope, can be by the sun at noon.
Well, that's interesting. Did you make observations the next day at noon or not?
Well, none of us had a telescope, and we didn't know quite what to do. But the next day, it was in all of the papers, and you might have seen it. Mark Wilson observed very large sunspots on the sun at noon, and it was odd because it was in a period of declining sunspot activity. And by the next day, these large sunspots were gone, where usually they last a month or so. And also, at noon, a large fleet of saucers were observed over Yuma, Arizona, and there was a jet plane in connection with it that crashed, and the cause of this was unknown.
Well, this is really interesting. I do know as a scientist myself that sunspots often last at least 30 days.
Yes.
Then perhaps they did take their spacecraft close to the sun.
Yes, that is possible.
Did you receive any information in these radio contacts which would tell you what planets the people were from that you contacted?
Well, one of the most interesting, and first of all, I'll mention our own planet Earth. As the messages came in, they would say, calling Saras, and they spell it S-A-R-A-S, or O-S. And we finally tumbled to the fact that they were calling us, and that was at least one of their words for this Earth. I did a little research on that, but I didn't have any hopes that I would find that word, but I wanted to know why they would use that in contacting us. And I found in the ancient Chaldean language that this word means repetition, or repetition of cataclysms. And so you can readily see why they would give our Earth that name, because we have had many catastrophes in the past, continental catastrophes on Earth. Also, they used the word when speaking of Mars, M-A-S-A-R, or Massar. I have never found where that word originated. Perhaps it is one of their own words. But we know that we have been in contact, at least with the craft, and I have too, as so many people feel, that they must have very unusual equipment to be able to contact another planet. There was a movie recently, The Red Planet Mars, which involved a very complicated hydrogen valve and expensive equipment to be able to do this type of work. However, I believe that our messages from this handshack were relayed from these ships and then on to the planet. Of course, they would have the knowledge to be able to do this. Besides contacting Mars directly, not only the ships, but we have contacted Mars directly. Also, we have had contact with Jupiter, which has been relayed from Mars and from there onto a ship and to our station. Also, we have had contact with Saturn, and we have had contact not directly with Venus, but we have had mention of it as if one ship was signaling another ship from Venus. And we have also had, and I think this is one of the most amazing things, we have had contact with ships from several other solar systems besides our own.
This is really amazing. It's getting to the point now where the story of the saucers is perhaps the most important story that has ever come to this Earth.
Yes, I think it is, because perhaps these people with their greater intelligence have the answers
that mankind has been searching for centuries. Perhaps you could give us a little light on a question that I'm sure is bothering most people. Did they give you any indication why they have come here in such large numbers at this time?
Yes, while I might add this, that the messages were very friendly and were given the wording and the nature of the messages would make you immediately think of a very loving father giving advice to his child. There was never the note of an authoritative nature or one of giving orders. And while they were very friendly, yet they were very firm also. And almost from the start of our radio messages, there was the indication that they have been alerted because of our atomic experiments on Earth. And although they have been coming here for many hundreds of years, and in some cases it looks as if they have been coming for several thousand years to Earth, but they have not wanted to interfere before in the progress that man is making on this planet Earth. But recently, because of these atomic experiments, they have shown themselves more and are really very concerned over this work.
Well, have they made any mention as to why they are so concerned about our atomic bomb explosions? Is there any danger that we are in?
Well, in our radio messages, almost immediately, from the beginning, and they told us and repeated it many, many times, that our Earth is off its orbit at this time somewhat, and is also lifting. To back this up, I might mention what we have discovered here on Earth ourselves. About a year or two ago, there was considerable mention of the great pileup of ice at the North and the South Poles. And we were thinking of redistributing this ice and to alleviate this problem of using atomic bombs to loosen it. And the planet was getting, you might say, top heavy at that time. We also, to back this thing up, we know of the strange weather that we've had all over the world. We have had drought in places where there has always been abundant rain. We have had a terrific amount of rainfall. I know this from my own state of Arizona, that over 7 years, we have had very little rain, and the water level has gone down considerably, and people were getting very concerned over this, the ranchers and so on. But this last year, we have had a great abundance of rain, and we are continuing to get a great abundance of moisture there in Arizona. And this is true all over the strange weather conditions throughout the world. Also, you can hardly pick up a daily newspaper without reading about earthquakes or many volcanic eruptions throughout the world, tidal waves, and so on, which all goes in to back up the statement that these people have made on their radio contacts about the present conditions on Earth.
Well, then our atomic bomb explosions must have been putting our Earth as a planet into somewhat of an unstable condition. And then these space travelers are not here just for a vacation, but there is a serious situation that exists here.
Yes, they have told us that a very poor condition exists on your planet Earth at this time. Now, we know that they have told us that they are here to aid us, to help us, but also that if anything happens to Earth, it may very seriously damage the other planets in our system. As we know,
each planet is in a state of balance in connection with the other planets, its neighbors. And it's very likely that if great disturbance occurs on Earth, even perhaps destroying the planet entirely, that it might damage life on other worlds also.
Well, that really is a serious situation. I might add that I've noticed myself that we have had an increase in the size and number of sunspots, usually the day after each of the atomic explosions. And from our past studies in 200 years back, we know that a large sunspot number always gives us grief in one way or another here, usually in the way of droughts and earthquakes and volcanic activity, the way you mentioned. So that seems to give us a good enough reason why they're here. Did you obtain any somewhat detailed information from them as to what advances they have made in science?
Yes, as an anthropologist, I was very interested, of course, and very excited about the possibility of contacting men from other planets. And I was most interested in what type of culture, in other words, something of their sociological background. And we asked the question, had they made any great advancements in medical science? We know now that we are trying to conquer cancer and polio and so on. And it would be a wonderful thing if we could receive information from these people, because evidently they were far ahead of us, and perhaps they had conquered these diseases. So we asked that question, and they answered no. We were puzzled and asked, well, you have gone far ahead of us in other things. Why haven't you advanced in medical science? And they came in and said, well, that is very simple. No disease.
Well, this is simply amazing.
Yes, it is. The fact that there are spacecraft in our atmosphere at this time is really astounding in itself, but not nearly so astounding as the message that these people have to bring. And it is a wonderful message for men on this planet.
Could you give us an estimate on approximately how many years they are ahead of us in advancements in culture and science and so on?
Yes, it just so happens that we did ask that, and they came back with this reply. We do not think of time as you do, and do not reckon in days, months, and years as you people on Earth do. But considering your use of years, Mars would be approximately 30,000 years in advancement of Earth, and Venus would be about 50,000 years ahead of Earth in progress, and the other planets, the outer planets going from Jupiter, Saturn, and so on, would be even in greater advancement. And there is indication that men of other solar systems are very far in advancement, and in fact getting up so that you can't even count. It would be millions and millions of years ahead of us.
Well, this is really amazing. Then, as far as we have thought we have advanced, it now begins to appear as if we are a bit on the bottom of the scale of advancement.
As far as our own solar system, and from what we have received in these radio messages, the planet Earth at one time was advanced. We have many legends of the Saturnian ages or the Golden Age on Earth. There is much reference made to that. We find that in anthropology. And the legends go that men at that time were able to speak with angels, and they were very close to their creator. But now, there is every indication that the planet Earth on the bottom as far as other planets in our own system are concerned.